services and organizations that benefit you as a citizen of Forsyth County. Welcome to Empowering You, your host, Brian Anthony.
Good afternoon. It's noon here on this Sunday as we get ready to wrap up and wind down another summer here in the Triad. This is Empowering You. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Brian Anthony. Empowering You is a show where we highlight local nonprofits in our city, county, region, and the state, and many of the services they provide you, the citizens of Forsyth County, and the Triad. We'll also introduce to you as many of our local corporations that have community initiatives designed to benefit you and continue to make our region a great place for all of us to live. Not only will we feature nonprofits and corporate community initiatives, we'll also hear from our local entities like the City of Winston-Salem, the Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools, Forsyth County Health Department, and also we'll do a monthly feature where we'll focus on staying true to the name of the show, Empowering You, by focusing on empowerment. All packed into a one-hour show. We hope that you make it a point to join us every Sunday following Money-Making Conversations at noon. Also, if you miss it, the podcast is available on our website, as all of our public affairs programming is, just by logging on to WSNCradio.org and clicking media on our navigation bar. You can also access our website on our free mobile app that you can download in your device's app store, whether that be Play Store or Apple Store. We have a busy week coming up to wind down this great summer we've had here in the Triad. National Black Theater Festival, Downtown Jazz Series here at WSNC. A busy week coming up. We'll kick off Coach's Corner tomorrow night with Coach Robert Massey and WSNC's broadcast team member, color analyst Alan Chavis. And then next weekend, man, are we going to be busy. The John Coltrane International Jazz and Blues Festival gets underway on Saturday and Sunday. And then right here on WSNC, of course, we will be in Canton, Ohio at the NFL Hall of Fame, Tom Benson Hall of Fame Field, where our Rams will take on Central State Marauders. We'll bring you all the action, pregame show, all of that great stuff live here on WSNC and our radio network, streaming online, WSNCradio.org, and through our mobile apps. Game time is at 4 o'clock. We're at the time of the year when the adults are probably empty of their pockets getting the kids ready for school. School is getting back in session. It's in session here on campus. I'm sure it's Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools are in session as well. So it would behoove me today, before we get to the Labor Day weekend, to have our guests, our monthly guests, who have been absent this summer because they've been doing a lot of planning, a lot of workshops, a lot of preparation for this upcoming school year. Let me welcome in the Director of Communications and Marketing, Brent Campbell. Is that your right title?
You know, it just changed this summer. So now it's Communications, or Chief Communications and External Relations Officer. You know, got to have all those words.
The most important part is the chief part for me. So we have him here today to talk about a number of things that parents have on their minds, I'm sure students have on their minds, and the district also had on their minds during the summer. Let's start with the summer and the summer prep that kept you away from me for the summer. A lot of things going on in terms of getting ready for the school year. What kind of workshops and stuff were important for the district to be involved in to prepare for this particular year?
Well, and moving into this year, of course, we have a couple of big rocks, big focuses. One of those, again, is equity. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of workshops, lots of things that have happened around equity. But in that, it's tied into the code of character, conduct, and support, our new code, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about. But also school safety. We've had a lot of school safety events happen and things that we've thought about and worked on over the summer. Climate, we're looking at ways to improve the culture and the climate of all our schools. So there's been a lot of efforts focused kind of on those pieces over the summer as well. And then staffing, just in and of itself. We've worked really hard over the summer to recruit but also retain good teachers and employees, not just teachers, but across the board. So those have been some of our big focuses over the summer as we prepare for what's to come this year.
All right. We did an interview before the summer, before you guys got really busy, and we talked with the gentleman who was responsible for implementing this code of character conduct and support. Let's get into that. I know, excuse me, the last time that I talked to him, that following week there was a meeting with the school board, and it was an open meeting that the parents could come in and voice their opinions. So where are we with that? I know it passed. And so how is that set up the school year in preparation for what is the code of character conduct and support for those that don't know what it is?
Well, so we've always had a code of character in the school district, but this year we took a hard look at it and worked with some professionals that have worked with districts across the country to really hone in on what some of our issues and our problems that we wanted to change by using behavior as that changing point. So I'll give you an example. Last year we were able to tell that there were 30,000 lost instructional days due to suspensions, school suspensions. That's about 5,000 students that were suspended on average of 6 days or so. And most of those were African-American students or Hispanic students. We found that black students are 4 times more likely to be suspended. Hispanic students are 2 times more likely to be suspended. That's not acceptable. So how do we take behavior and make it something that we teach and that we help restore students? Students are going to be students. Kids are going to be kids.
Kids are going to be kids.
They're going to act up. So instead of being punitive, we wanted to take a look at making something more restorative. So that's what this code of conduct is all about, is how do you make this less punitive, more restorative? We teach math. We teach science. We teach reading. But we don't teach behavior. It's always been you do something wrong, you get punished, you come back to school. Now the focus is something happens, there's a behavior you don't like. Well, how can we help you learn not to do that behavior, learn not to repeat that behavior, and not focus on these suspensions? Because the bottom line is if students aren't in school, they don't learn. So if they're suspended, they're not there. They can't learn. So in a nutshell, that's kind of where the problem was. That's what the code is. And, you know, Dr. Cato that you mentioned, our Chief Officer of Learning Supports and his team worked with parents, staff members, community members all across the district for the past year putting this code together. And this year we're rolling it out. Our staff this week has been trained the whole the first 2 weeks right before school started have been trained on what this code means, looking at the behavior matrices and figuring out what kind of ways to respond and how they're going to put these restorative interventions into place. And so we're really excited about how we think this is going to work and how it's going to impact students, but also parents, because parents are a vital partner in this and understanding how this works, but also understanding that they can reach out to us for help and that we need them. They're a partner in all of this work. So in a nutshell, that's it.
Having come from the lineage of two parents who were educators. My mother retired as an elementary school principal, so I get it. I get it totally. The biggest part, I think, is the assumption that when kids come to first grade, kindergarten, whatever, that they've been instructed on how to act from their parents. Well, it's a clear indication that society as a whole, from a parenting perspective, there are some issues. So we can't assume that anymore. So I think the other part of that that plays a significant role in the amount of disproportionate suspensions that you mentioned is the culture. Because sometimes, and we talked about this, what's his name again?
Dr. Cato.
Dr. Cato? Okay, Dr. Cato, we went into this in depth. Sometimes, and let's just call it what it is. Sometimes, like you said, when you have a black student and a white teacher, the cultures are too different on how that particular student or that particular child was raised versus what that teacher understands should be behavioral actions that that student should know. So How does that play into the number of suspensions as well?
So really, that's the crux of it, is that there was not consistency across the board. So at one school, you may have teachers reacting one way. At another school, you may have teachers reacting a different way.
Okay.
So this is really meant to bring that consistency and give them a guide so that they can look at it, figure out where it falls in the matrix, and then what is the behaviors that should follow that? What are the intervention steps that should follow that? And you put together a team. This has a much more team approach with the social worker being involved, the teacher, school administrator, the parent. So there's more of a team approach to when something happens, how do we walk through this step together? But then bring them out of the punishment. There's still punishments in here, but bring them out of that and make it a learning, a moment, a
experience,
teaching moment.
Yes, yes. I love the fact that the parents are included in this process, because we can't assume, we always hear, you're not going to do this to my child. Well, do you know what we're doing to your child, first of all? Do you know why we're doing it? And I think it's paramount that the parents are included in this process. And I love the fact that they're a part of the process, because they then get a chance to see, this is why the district is doing this. This is how it affects the classroom. This is how it affects the other students. This is the best way so that when we get past this point, we don't have to worry about this again, because the child fully understands now and the parent understands what we're trying to do. And we're not trying to put their child in a position where they're singled out.
Well, and this is as much about the parents being a partner. So bring the parent in, talk them through what is their role. This lays out what is the student's rights and responsibilities, but what is the parent's rights and responsibilities too? Where does the parent fall into this? And so if they look at our code, which is a really large document, but it is pretty easy to read, they go through and there's a lot of talk for parents about what do you need to do? How do we need you to be a part of this? Very different than in the past, where here's a punishment, take it home, tell your mom and dad what happened to you.
Okay.
This is more of invite the parents into the conversation, but also build relationship with those parents. If you build relationships both at home and at school, the outcome is going to be better across the board.
It really is. It really is. That's great. Any pushback that you, any challenges that you foresee getting into the school year with it being so new, things that you're anticipating that you guys are getting ready for with this process?
With this process, you know, there's been some folks that have said, well, this feels like we're taking punishments away. There's been some folks that have misunderstood that there are still things that are being, students are being held accountable for, and that this lays out what that structure may be. So this is not something that's completely removing any type of consequence for a behavior. Instead, it's reshaping how that consequence fits into the overall picture. And that's what people need to know, that there are still consequences. There are still tears. There are still severities. There's obviously going to be behaviors, you know, things like bringing a weapon to school that aren't going to be tolerated. So it's not about removing consequences. It's about changing how you look at consequences and then what's the pattern once the consequence is handled. It's not just over and done with. There's then some interventions and some restoration and some conversation to be had and some education of what's the next step.
Let me ask you this. Is law enforcement included in this process?
They're not. So we're trying to be, and we've worked with our SROs to understand there's a difference in breaking the law and breaking a rule at school.
School policy, yes.
You know, so they're very different. We try to keep those very separate. Obviously, law enforcement officers, if they witness something that's breaking the law, they have a bound duty to uphold their duty and roles. But this is very different than breaking the law.
This
is all about school rules and school behavior and behaviors in school that are ultimately disruptive, not just for the student that's doing it, because it may end up putting them out, but also the other students.
For those parents that are just now finding out about this, are learning about it, want to know more, how should they go about, and who should they contact to get involved in this process?
So this is going to be, this isn't a short process. Over the next 6 months, the students are going to start working this out in their classrooms. Teachers are being trained, like I said, to let the first 2 weeks of school. And then they're going to be integrating this into their lessons. And then they're going to have messages home to parents and information home to parents. This is going to go on into the fall, probably even into the early winter, where we really walk through this slowly. So it's not going to change overnight. But it is going to be a process that parents are going to be involved mm-hmm. right into the classroom level throughout the next several months. So if they don't feel like they know that much about it right now, they probably don't. Mm-hmm. But they're going to. This is going to take time. There's a lot to learn. But we do have our website up with all of this. They can take a look at it. They can read it. It's in Spanish and in English.
Okay.
And there's a lot of information out there. And they'll be getting more as we go along the way.
Is there room over the next 6 months as you go along through this process, learning it as well, for adjustments down the road?
Heck yeah, we know that this is going to change. This is a living document, so it's going to change. This may not work. We may find out other ways to do it. And I think that's part of the process here is to figure out what's the best ways to make some of these interventions work. So this is a living, breathing document. Things will change. Things mm-hmm. will improve. Conversations will change. Mm-hmm. And we'll learn along the way as well. And mm-hmm. I think that's kind of the beauty of it, is that it does have that flexibility that we can use.
I like this. I loved it from the beginning when I heard about it. I wondered, and Dr. Cato and I talked about and joked about, well, it wasn't a joke, but it's reality. People were getting their information off of Facebook mm-hmm. and not from the horse's mouth, so to speak, or from the district itself. So I kind of worried about pushback. It seems that we've gone through the summer and eliminated a lot of that and are ready for a great school year when it comes to disciplinary action in the school district.
Yeah, I think this is a fantastic way to start the year to really take a look at shifting culture. Mm-hmm. Because really, the bottom line, this is about relationships.
Yes.
If you have great relationships with parents, if teachers have great relationships with their students, and mm-hmm. they get to know the root of these behaviors oftentimes have a reason.
Absolutely.
So you get to the root of those behaviors and get everybody involved, you can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of preventative work in this, too. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work to figure out things before it becomes a behavior mm-hmm. problem. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of great pieces to this. I think there's a lot of great work. Is it going to change overnight? Again, no. But it's going to be a long process. But it's a process that I think the district as a whole is really excited about. And our teachers and administrators, there's been a lot of great buy-in. And it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out this year.
I understand this community very well because I've been here for probably 17 years now. So it's a very amenable community when it comes to working together on newer things. Mm-hmm. On a larger scale, are we one of the few districts? Because I haven't seen a plan like this in a lot of districts across the country.
Well, I would say that they're out there. There are a lot of larger urban districts, but maybe not necessarily here locally.
Okay.
I know Guilford County has something similar in process, but we looked at it, mm-hmm. tweaked it to our specifications. Charlotte-Mecklenburg has something similar as well.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, to your point, this community, what we are thankful for and really grateful for is we have an active community.
Yes, active
parents who want to be involved. And so a lot of this is because of their voice, mm-hmm. the things they've already said, the mm-hmm. issues they've lifted up to the district, and our superintendent and team have taken those mm-hmm. and worked those into this document. Mm-hmm. So because the community is active, mm-hmm. I really believe that's part of the reason we're where we are.
Mm-hmm. I just was blessed to have a couple of weeks here where I had some downtime while I was still working, believe it or not. I had my grandson in town from Michigan, mm-hmm. And taking him back put me in a spiral mindset of him preparing for school and what we've been witnessing throughout the country over the last several years. This is not anything new, but the violence due to gun violence and a potential shooter coming into the school district. I know if I'm worried about it from a distance, parents are worried about it right here in our community. Mm-hmm. Where are we in terms of preparation for that? And you all, I'm sure you spent a lot of time discussing this throughout the summer.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time thinking about this over the recent years and months. One of the biggest things that we've done over this past year is we've adopted, along with all of the law enforcement agencies, mm-hmm. The universities as well, mm-hmm. Representatives from Winston-Salem State, Wake Forest, Forsyth Tech, we are using what's called Standard Response Protocol.
Okay.
So this new language is really simply common language mm-hmm. to help people understand what's going on a campus.
Mm-hmm.
So you've heard the term lockdown, of course.
Obviously, yes.
But what we found last year was we also had a community lockdown. So that mm-hmm. meant that something was happening in the neighborhood, not necessarily at the school.
Yeah.
But we would go on community lockdown. In other words, keep the school secure inside, business as usual inside, but just not letting anybody in or out because of whatever was happening mm-hmm. in the community.
Mm-hmm.
What we found is parents were hearing lockdown. mm-hmm. not community lockdown. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they go into a panic. It causes undue stress because mm-hmm. they think something serious is happening in the building. Along with that, they didn't understand what it meant to have a secure in the building. So we changed this language. We've worked with this group called the I Love You Guys Foundation. They've done this all over the country. Mm-hmm. And together, every law enforcement agency, every emergency responder, and like I mentioned, all of our universities and the public school district, as well as our charter and private schools in this county, mm-hmm. came together earlier this month to train on this protocol. And so okay. now we've got five simple terms. We're using lockdown, which basically means there's something serious in the building. Mm-hmm. We're using evacuate, which could be for a weather situation or, say, a water main bust in the mm-hmm. building, whatever mm-hmm. it may be. Mm-hmm. Shelter could mean, again, something with weather, but we have to stay on the campus. Secure is replacing that community lockdown term.
Okay.
So if it's secure, you hear the term campus is secure, that just means people aren't going in and out.
Okay.
But business as usual inside.
Okay.
A hold is also where in the building, let's just say a student has an accident in the hallway. Mm-hmm. So we've got to stop classes for a minute from changing mm-hmm. so we can clean it up. So mm-hmm. we're going to tell everybody to hold in their classroom.
Okay.
So these five terms are really just meant to be simple, clear, easy terms that parents and students understand. It doesn't cause undue stress. And right. if we're all working together and all using the same terms in this community, I think this is going to be huge. Mm-hmm. Just in first, removing those barriers to your point of social media earlier. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Somebody puts such and such schools in a lockdown when it really was in a community lockdown, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but it causes a lot of stress. So we're hoping this clears a lot of that up. So that's a big step.
That's going to put added, not stress, but weight. And focus in your office mm-hmm. because I gotta imagine once you have one of these situations in a school, then they have to communicate with the district, and then you go into A mode, A team mode, because then you have to disseminate this information through the media, which sometimes has a tendency to put their own spin on mm-hmm. it. So are they as in tune with these terms as the district will be?
Our media partners have been great this summer. We had a session with them as well
okay.
to work through these terms. And so they've been with us on this path.
Okay.
But I think once we get, they also hear traffic from law enforcement partners and other things on scanners and radios mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. whatnot. So once we have everybody using this terminology, I think we're going to be in a much better place mm-hmm. just to rectify what's really happening. Is mm-hmm. it really a community lockdown, or is it really a lockdown? Or mm-hmm. is there something really serious, or is there an issue that's just related to something in the building that may be minor but does impact student traffic or flow for that day?
Students carry cell phones. Something like this are just based on rumor. Rumor starts floating around mm-hmm. campus. Something's going on in the campus. They start texting their parents. Mm-hmm. Are they going to go through some type of workshop to familiarize them with these terms as well?
You got it. We've got this language posted now all over the schools.
Okay.
During the first week, they're also going to go through, see a series of videos so that they understand what do these different things mean. Mm-hmm. And then the schools have a series of scripts so that within the building they can say, student, staff, we're on hold for the moment, mm-hmm. which means we need to have something fixed outside of the classroom or in the common area. So that means stay in your classroom for now, mm-hmm. continue your business, and we'll be able to move in just a little bit, mm-hmm. open back up to common areas, whatever that is. So they are going through these terms, and I can see, or you can see on our website, how clear some of this is. Mm-hmm. It's been used across the country, like I said, with great success, and we really are excited. And the fact that we've got the buy-in from all of our law enforcement partners and our university partners mm-hmm. are joining us in this year, I think it's going to be big for this community.
Let's say that we won't have this happen in our communities, even though we did. We've experienced it.
Right.
I don't want to get into details right. of that. Say, for instance, there's something that goes on at a school. Word gets out. Parents subconsciously start calling the school. Mm-hmm. What's going on with my kid? They can't get through the line because now everybody's hearing about it and it's jammed. What's the procedure from the district standpoint? Because I think that happened at Mount Tabor.
Yeah, so we would communicate. When we go into lockdown, we do communicate what is going on. Mm-hmm. We'll let folks know as soon as we can with as much information as we can. Sometimes there's not something that we can tell them at that point, but we'll let them know as much as we can mm-hmm. as soon as we can as it relates to something that's a threat to their students. Good, so if they good. Were to have to be evacuated, for good. Example, or if they were have to go into shelter because of a weather situation – or, of course, a lockdown situation. There would be communication to them just as soon as possible. But a part of this that I found interesting and that works through this is it also helped our administrators understand and it gave us some language to use to tell students if they're in one of these situations, tell your parents you're going to check in with them every 5 to 10 minutes and let them know.
Mm-hmm.
And then students, tell your parents we're still in hold. And it gives them the language to share with parents.
Absolutely.
So I think that'll be big just in helping students because they, like you said, they got their cell phones. They're ready to communicate right then and there. So
absolutely.
They don't want to partner with them?
right. Absolutely. This crossed my mind as well. Grandson is probably in the fifth grade, has his younger sister who's going into kindergarten. So they'll be in the same school.
Mm-hmm.
Have a third grandchild that will be at daycare. So the two kids that are in school, let's say hypothetically, and God forbid, I don't ever want to see this happen. Something happens in their school. They go into an alarm situation. His first instinct is to go find his sister.
Mm-hmm.
That may not be a part of the protocol. So what happens in that situation?
So, well, hopefully, you know, they'll be able to realize that when we go into a secure and our teachers know they're staying here. They're not going to be able to leave the classroom or leave the area that they're in. There's also language in this and in the videos that students see. What happens if, say, for example, I'm in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
I've left class to go to the bathroom for as a second as students have to do, and this happens and there's a secure. It helps them understand where to go or what to do in those situations. But again, I think that the idea really is getting our adults and our staff to understand what these terms mean, but also communicate it clearly to the students so they know that when we go into this, your sibling or your friend or whoever it is also in this and their teacher, their classroom is following the same protocol with us.
Okay, good. I think that should put – I would just rather that this didn't happen, quite honestly. It just blows my mind that this happens around school kids or in a school. It drives me insane. However, we are in reality times. Things happen. People are frustrated. So we have to guard against any potential situation that might occur. And this is a great plan to have and communication wise, because I think that's where a lot of plans fall apart and parents get frustrated and go rogue and go into school trying to find their kids in a dangerous situation when they don't know what's really going on. So that's good. Let's move on to a situation with the students now. We used to call it teasing. When I came up in school, kids like to have fun. They don't really sometimes they don't understand, especially when they're younger, when they're teasing a kid about something that's really at the heart or at the root of a problem that they're going through that they don't know. But as you get older, it becomes called bullying. Bullying is a major, major problem in school. It happens on the adult level. So it's going to trickle down to our school systems. And the problem that I think it's a big issue for the kids, what is Winston-Salem-Forsyth County Schools doing to help kids to understand about the dangers of this and how to report it?
So bullying is obviously something we've been working with and working on for quite some time, and it is a heavy part of the code.
Okay.
So it's explained in there. And when you look at these sections for parents and caregivers, one of the things that it talks about is what to do, what can I as a parent do if I feel like this is happening?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've got a lot of good options. So we have this Say Something Anonymous Reporting app, which is on our website, but it also can be on our mobile app.
Mm-hmm.
Parents can file an anonymous report.
Okay.
And let the school know. It goes immediately to school administrators, to the security team, and to upper administration as soon as it's reported. It also can connect live with our local law enforcement if need be. They get examples of it too.
Okay.
So that's connected. That's for the older students, middle school students. For the younger students, we have what we call the Bully Patrol app. Again, same similar type of thing, but it's more directed toward the school. It's not necessarily connected to law enforcement, but they can file anonymous reports. If they want, don't have to be anonymous. They can leave information as well. The other piece that we really recommend is reach out to a trusted staff member. We all know that a kid may have a favorite teacher or a favorite counselor or even an administrator, somebody that they really trust. That goes true for parents too. So reach out to someone. We we've given them the tools of how to reach out, how to look up that district policy and see what we consider bullying so that they can understand what it is.
Okay.
And then encouraging them to, again, reach out to that trusted adult and let them know what's happening. A lot of times the parents can sometimes see this behavior or see how it's impacting the student at home mm-hmm. before a child has maybe told a teacher that this is happening to mm-hmm. them. So mm-hmm. we're asking parents to really jump in there and help us with that this year. But we've got, like I said, the Say Something app, the Bully Patrol app. All those reporting methods, I think, are a good step in helping us know so that the sooner we know, the better we can investigate.
Once you find out, what can be done to get the parent and the aggressive student, the one that's the aggressor, what can be done as part of the code of conduct? I'm glad that that goes back to that. What happens in that situation to get the aggressive child to understand what they're doing is not right and how to correct that mentality?
So that goes back to the behavior matrix. And first, let's look at where the behavior is. How serious is it? What was it? Is it physical in nature mm-hmm. or is it verbal in nature?
Okay.
But it really goes back to what's the root cause. The child that's the aggressor or the bully, so mm-hmm. to speak, probably has a reason for that. There's mm-hmm. probably something going on in their world. So let's go back and try to figure out that reason. There may be a punitive side to that, but after that, we're going to go through some restorative interventions. They're going to have some meetings with the counselors and with parents and with the team to figure out what are the next steps to help them learn from that, to learn why that's destructive, not necessarily just to the person being bullied, but to themselves too, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And try to figure out what the root cause of that problem is. So there will be interventions after the fact. That's very different. Mm-hmm. In the past, we weren't necessarily doing those as a whole or as a standard. That may have happened in some schools,
okay.
but in others it was you've bullied, you've been punished, now come back to school. Mm-hmm. That doesn't teach you what you did wrong. Mm-hmm. That doesn't teach you how to fix the behavior. That also doesn't get to the root cause of the behavior. Mm-hmm. So we really hope that the code helps lay all of that out as well, which is very different for us this year.
Okay. Talking to the chief communications director, that's not his right title, but that just tells you how where he is on the ladder, Brent Campbell with the Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools about the upcoming year. Let me take one step back real quick, and let's go back to the violence control.
Mm-hmm.
Athletic events, away from setting up a perimeter two blocks around the event and making sure everybody is searched that's coming in that neck of the woods. What are we doing leading up to this? Because we're finally getting back from COVID, which we still got to address. We're finally getting back from COVID. People are coming out in numbers to see mm-hmm. their kids perform. Mm-hmm. What are we doing to try and keep these environments safe?
So you may recall last year after the incident at Mount Tabor and mm-hmm. after a look at some of our large-scale incidents, we implemented a clear bag policy.
Okay.
So if you're coming to any one of our large events or large athletic events, we do not allow anything inside that we can't see into.
Okay.
So there's the clear bag policy. We also started wanding folks with metal okay. detectors, okay. handheld. This year, we applied for some federal school safety grants. So now each high school and middle school has two portable walkthrough
okay.
metal detectors.
Okay.
So folks have already, we've already had a few Friday night football games. They've probably seen it. If you haven't been yet, and once we get into the season, you're going to see at mm-hmm. these events walkthrough metal detectors and wands.
Mm-hmm.
So the clear bag policy is still in effect. The okay. walkthrough metal detectors are there now.
Okay.
But those metal detectors are portable. So that's also going to go back to the school day. If there's a day where we think we have a verified threat, we could set those up inside the building and use them if we needed to.
Okay.
They're not going to be there every single day of the week. But they're something that we can use as needed. But you for sure will see them at these large events that you're
good.
Mentioning.
Very good. I thought about the classroom and then I went, oh, wait a minute. There's a moneymaker here going on. I could just see all these big crowds with high school football mm-hmm. and basketball coming back. That's great to know. So people should feel safe. I'll leave that alone because then I'll get into commentary I don't want to get into. It's personal. Let's talk about I'm hearing there's a shortage of teachers. How can that possibly be?
How can that possibly be? Yeah. Talk about personal commentary. We'll stay away there.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah.
you know, across the country, we're no different than anybody else in seeing a short of teachers and folks either not going into the profession, so young mm-hmm. professionals aren't going to schools like they used to be teachers, or from folks who've been in the profession and are transitioning their teaching skills to other industries.
Okay.
That's happening across the entire country. This year, here we are, the first week of school or so, we're roughly 80 positions open.
Okay.
Now, if you did the math, that's about one per school, but it doesn't work out that way. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it works out that a lot of times some of the higher needs schools are the ones that end up with more positions. So we do have some positions. We are working with long-term substitutes.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing some creative scheduling in our middle schools, mm-hmm. and we're also using some virtual options. So some of the places where we have a teacher that's a proven high-flying, great EVOS scores, which are their scores for their students, they may be teaching a class but also have a virtual audience in another classroom mm-hmm. and be the teacher of record for both of those at same time in the same school. And they're getting extra compensation if they're doing that. So we're trying some creative things to fill some of those spaces. Again, the areas where it's tough for us this year are the maths and the sciences.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we're really struggling to find folks. We're also taking some of our coaches from our central office and putting them in teams back into these schools, and they're team teaching where there's not a teacher.
Okay.
Superintendent McManus was very clear that she wanted students to have regularity
mm-hmm.
and a
mm-hmm.
highly qualified teacher mm-hmm. in front of them at the beginning of the year, and we're trying everything possible to make that happen. It's going to look different mm-hmm. from place to place and different from years past, but I think we've got some good things in place, and we're slowly filling those positions. People are slowly coming back and figuring out they do want to do this, and we're working to recruit and retain teachers.
Okay. If you're okay with that said, having that many vacancies right now, that means that some substitute teachers will roll into those roles, those current substitute teachers. Does that create a need for more substitute teachers?
There's always a need for substitute teachers. That's no secret. We have about 1,000 folks on our active substitute list. I think it was 1,015 when I looked last week. But, you know, as good as I do, that doesn't mean on any given day that 1,015 are available.
Right.
So different people, different places, different times.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always looking for folks who are substitutes or could be good substitutes. Retired individuals who mm-hmm. maybe have been in education in some way, shape, or form, who want something to do kind of every other day or one day a week would be a great person mm-hmm. to look at coming and being a substitute. We provide them with training. There's benefit opportunities for substitutes.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking for folks always for substitutes, but we can never say that we have enough.
Right, right.
We always
right,
need more.
Right. Now, this is where I show how good of a note keeper that I am. Earlier in our conversation today, and I'm talking to Brent Campbell with the Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools, we talked about climate adjustments that are being made mm-hmm. throughout the district. Can you lend some insight in terms of some of the changes that are happening with regards to climate?
Well, so I'm going to go back to the code.
Okay.
Because that's really what it's about. It's about those relationships and how should a teacher be trying to first build relationships with those students. So we've worked on things as simple as it makes you feel good if somebody knows your name,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
If they know, hey, it's Brian. Mm-hmm. Good to see you. That alone. So certain tactics, just making students feel like they are valued,
mm-hmm.
that they are cared for, mm-hmm. and that they're a part of school. So another effort we're looking at is trying to make sure that every single student is mm-hmm. tied to an extracurricular or a club in some way, shape, or form. If you feel like you've got something that you like to do, that mm-hmm. you're excited to do, that you're a part of,
mm-hmm.
you're more likely to enjoy the day. Right? You build
those
new relationships.
Absolutely.
So that's another goal we're looking at this year is to try and make students feel connected.
Mm-hmm.
The more connected they feel to school, the better they do at school.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some big rocks, some really high-level pieces that we're looking at. But that's also a shift in mindset. It didn't used to be make a push to make students feel connected other than in the classroom.
Right, right.
Now we're looking at all those pieces to make them feel connected, loved, cared for, mm-hmm. and that school is a safe place where I can talk to somebody, I have an advocate if I need it, for
mm-hmm.
whatever the situation may be. So this is spelled out in the training for our staff as well, and I think that'll impact that climate.
Okay. You also mentioned the I Love You Guys Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that – well, you may not know where it started because it's a national thing, but what is that and how is that involved in Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools?
So I Love You Guys Foundation was started by a gentleman named John Michael Keyes. He lost his daughter in the Arapahoe High School shooting in Colorado.
Wow.
I believe it was in the early 2000s.
Right,
I'm not sure of the year.
Yeah, right.
But his life's mission has become – What can we do to ease parents, to make these situations feel better, but also to use situations to learn?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we learn something, unfortunately, when one of these things happen, we learn something new every single time. So his mission and his life story has become to develop the I Love You Guys Foundation and the name.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
was the last text from his daughter to him that day was I Love You Guys.
So
that's his work. That's his story. He has since joined forces with some parents who were involved in the Sandy Hook shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And together they formed this organization. They've researched. They've worked with law enforcement partners all over the country. They've done a lot of work now for more than 20 years. It's sad to think that a group's been working on this for almost 20 years. But for 20 years, they've been piecing this together.
And
the research behind it's really interesting. And again, for parents, this is some good stuff to really work through and learn and read and understand. And we think it'll help ease their mind because it's clear, concise language to let them know what's going on.
Is this linked on your website?
It is.
Okay.
It
good, is. Good. Good. We've covered some very important points here as people get ready for their kids to return to Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools. Code of character, conduct, and support. We've talked about that. We've talked about the concern of shooters in the schools or shooters on school grounds. That being a possibility. Hopefully it'll never happen again, but it's always a possibility because that's society. We talked about bullying. We talked about the shortage of teachers. We talked about the shortage of substitute teachers. We've talked about trying to make sure that athletic events are safe because we know people are coming back in droves now that we're out of COVID. We haven't talked about COVID. How is COVID is not like it was 2 years ago, obviously, but as I found out earlier in the summer, it's still spreading.
It's still there.
It's still spreading. What kind of procedures are in place for COVID? Are the precautionary measures still as strict as they once were, or have they been relaxed, and where are we with COVID?
So the measures have been relaxed, and that's per, you know, we follow the NCDHHS guidelines and then, of course, the CDC guidelines for that. This year, it will be much like the end of last year in terms of students will be able to be tested at school. So every one of our schools will be a testing site. There will be either a school staff member that's trained, or we have contract employees with the Forsyth County Health Department that are in our schools as well.
Okay.
So they can test a student. If a student's feeling ill, we're going to test them. If they're negative, depending on how they feel, we'll send them back to class. If they're positive, they'll be going home. Of course, they have to have a parental consent to get that test. But the ability to be tested is there at school this year. The guidance this year, or for now, is that if you test positive, you remain isolated for 5 days, not at school. Then when you come back, those 5 days that you're back, you wear a mask for those 5 days.
Okay.
There is no contact tracing this year. That is not something that's required or recommended necessarily by the state. So just because you maybe have been a close contact, we're not going to call and tell you that or let you
know.
But if you know that you've been close to someone, but you don't have symptoms and you're testing negative right out the gate, it's still requested that you wear a mask. Not a must, but that's a best practice that's been outlined by the CDC and NCDHHS. And then masks are optional this year. But I'll tell you, I've done open houses the past couple of days, and you still see a good mix, just like you do in the public. Some people wearing masks, some not. We welcome that. If you want to wear a mask, a student wants to wear a mask, that is perfectly fine. We want you to do what makes you feel comfortable. So you're going to see that even amongst our own staff. You're going to see a mixture of that. So masks are welcome, but not required this year. So those are the biggest pieces. We do have the testing available. You still will need to stay at home if you test positive. And the other biggest message, maybe the simplest message, is if you just feel ill, don't come to school sick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stay at home. Figure out what it is. Don't put those other folks at risk.
Okay. That's good to know as well. Haven't seen a lot of spikes in the school district.
Well, so we haven't been in just officially.
Just among the teachers.
Among the teachers, we haven't seen a large number at this point.
Okay, good.
We're not working with a lot of time together yet, so we'll see how that goes.
Well, that's about to change, my friend. Are there any things that we haven't discussed that parents should know about as they send their kids back to school? What should they be prepared for?
The only other thing I would love to mention amongst some of our larger high schools, like our East Forsyth and our West Forsyth, for example, these are campuses that were built More than 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. At that point in time, you were a campus where you had multiple buildings
right.
and sidewalks right. in between the buildings.
Right.
This year, something very different at those schools is all the access to all the doors is controlled.
Okay.
So for a student to walk back and forth from building to building, they've got to punch in their student ID,
mm-hmm.
or staff members have to use their ID badge
okay.
to
okay.
badge into the building.
Okay.
The doors are all locked
Good.
All the time.
Good.
Even in class change. You know, just because there's traffic going doesn't mean the doors go unlocked.
Mm-hmm.
Students still need to know. And they know that ID number because they use it for testing. They use it for lunch.
Okay.
It's tied to them in many ways. But all of our campuses now have access control. So from elementary to high, these last few high schools were the last ones that didn't have
okay.
some type of full campus control,
mm-hmm.
Have that access control. And I think that's big. We learned with the I Love You Guys Foundation that in most cases, the number one reason someone was able to get into a school and start a school shooting was because of an unlocked door.
Absolutely.
So a
Absolutely.
Locked door is, according to the I Love You Guys Foundation, one of the biggest pieces of keeping a campus safe.
This has been some time ago. When my son was in high school, I can remember slipping on a warm-up suit, baseball cap,
mm-hmm.
leaving work, just to go observe him during his lunchtime hour. And I was able to slip on campus like I was a student.
Mm-hmm.
That scared the living daylights out of me. Nobody asked me questions. But this was some time ago. I can imagine with schools with multiple buildings how someone can come in on the backside and go undetected and slip in these buildings. It's very we're in a vastly wooded community.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a major, major step towards securing these buildings, especially if you don't want multiple police officers manning the posts of these schools looking like it's a war zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we want because it's not like that.
Well, and the other piece I'll mention to you, so to your point of not being seen,
mm-hmm.
perhaps, we just finished our upgrades to all of our camera systems. So some of our
good,
high schools have
good.
Upwards of 150, 160 cameras on their campus.
Oh, wow.
And these cameras are high definition.
Mm-hmm.
The principals, all the security team, administration team can pull them up on their cell phone. So they can be
oh,
anywhere
wow.
on campus
okay.
and pull those cameras up and see something that they may need to see
or okay.
they
okay.
may need to look at
okay.
or that somebody. It's not to say that someone's watching them 24/7,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but the idea is that they're constantly recording. We constantly have images. We can look quickly at something that we do need to see,
mm-hmm.
Even down to if somebody's trying to get into a building and they don't have a code and it can detect that they're jarring the door. We can look and see who it is
mm-hmm.
and figure out what's going on with that. So cameras are a piece to mention this
that's
year
great.
As well. We've had those in a lot of schools, but that bond from 2016 put them in phases. We move that up.
Okay.
And we're going into the year with all the schools
okay.
finished with that.
Any important rewards that the district has received throughout the summer, this summer?
Rewards.
We've talked about a lot of things that put fear in people. I was trying to find the right word to say. That puts fear in people. Is there anything positive in terms of major awards that you guys weren't expecting? Or
I don't know about awards, but I will say, you know, a shout out again to the voters for the 2016 bonds. That was a $350 million bond project that was done in phases.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're in that final phase. So students at North Forsyth, at Kennedy High School,
mm-hmm.
this year are seeing major differences in their building. They're coming into additional classrooms, to new technology, to new
yeah.
buildings. So some of our traditional older high schools have a complete new facelift this
mm-hmm.
year. So
mm-hmm.
for those students, it's exciting. And we still have some final pieces of that project to finish up. So there are new pieces out there. We've got some new buildings underway. In those terms, we're still working on what's going to happen with Brunson Elementary School,
mm-hmm.
what's going to happen with Ashley Elementary School, and looking at moving those projects forward. So thankfully, we do have a lot of work going on facilities and a lot of things happening,
okay.
and that's good. That's good
okay.
stuff.
Good, good. We're talking to Brent Campbell, Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools, Chief of Communications. Before we close out, we've covered a great deal of information. I think I put myself in the seat of a parent and asked the type of questions that I think as a parent or a grandparent I would want to know as my kids go into the school year. So is there anything that we've missed, anything that you can think of that should be added to this discussion?
I guess if I could say one thing to parents, it's that we need you. Mm-hmm. We need you to be with us, to work with us, not to be afraid of us, to be engaged. Mm-hmm. We want you to be engaged. We want you to be a part. You know, we struggled with volunteers because of COVID. That put a hold on many volunteer opportunities or mm-hmm. opportunities for visitors in schools. That's no more. Mm-hmm. We want you back in our buildings. We need volunteers. Okay. We need parents to come back into the building. We need folks to help students read. We've got lots of places that folks can do things. Mm-hmm. They can reach out to their local school and figure out what opportunities are there to our volunteer office. But that's what I would say is, you know, this year is, again, about building relationships and building them strong. And we have to have our parents and our caregivers. Yeah, and if absolutely. We don't, then there's something wrong. And we really need those folks with us this year.
It creates a different kind of environment when the parents are not involved. There's a lot of skepticism that goes on, a lot of doubt, a lot of finger pointing mm-hmm. when things don't go the way that they feel that it should go. So being involved, it's the same thing I say about politics, depending on what side of the road you are on that. Getting involved, you can't affect change if you're not involved, especially mm-hmm. when it's your child. I can't imagine having my child in a school somewhere and not really having a communication with the person that I'm enlisting their 8 hours a day to. I need to know as a teacher what your mindset. That's just me. Every parent is not like that. Every parent doesn't have that kind of time. There are parents that are working 3 and 4 jobs mm-hmm. that just don't have that time. So if you can, it's important that you lend that time to the district so that they get a feel for who these kids are coming from, the environments that they're in, and some of the challenges that you not necessarily need to get into detail with, but that there are challenges. They need the district needs to know that so that they can effectively move forward in certain situations. It's not saying that your child is causing problems. No, you could have one of the greatest kids in the world, and something's still going on in this school that the district needs to know about mm-hmm. that only you can help because only you know about it.
You know, and if I may jump in and say one good thing about COVID. So we all got used to the virtual world mm-hmm. and virtual meetings. Well, now, to your point of parents who have 3 jobs possibly or they mm-hmm. have schedules that don't allow them to go to the traditional PTA meeting or the traditional after-school meeting, we're having virtual options for parents at all times of the day mm-hmm. to talk to their teachers, to mm-hmm. reach out to teachers, to reach out to administrators, to be a part. So you don't necessarily have to be on campus or come to these events to be a part. We've really learned a lot of other ways to do this, mm-hmm. and we really hope – that parents will take advantage of those ways as well mm-hmm. this year. And again, I want to say, you know, it's not that our parents aren't involved because we've got great involvement across the board. But we always need more. Mm-hmm. We always need more help. We always need more folks involved. And again, with COVID, it kind of put people in a mindset that maybe I shouldn't go or I can't go to school. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not safe for me to go. We're past that now.
Yeah,
we really want our folks involved.
I like that angle of having the technology involved because of Zoom calls. It amazes me how many times I walk through a grocery store, I'm at a sporting event, and grown folks are on their phones talking, mm-hmm. FaceTiming, Facebook videoing, and all this other stuff. Utilize that time to check on your kids this school year.
Yep.
Brent Campbell, thank you so very much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
I think we've gotten a lot accomplished today. I like to think that this is your segment to get parents and the students ready for a great school year this year. What's it say in the Forsyth County?
We hope it's going to be a good one. We're ready.
Yeah. Thank you.